Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Henk Oudvall. I'm the co-chair of this working group. This is Test Traffic. I just got an email from the chair, Alex Tudor, saying that he has been delayed. He will be here later this morning, and he asked me to jump in at and start to get the meeting rolling. So, first order of business is the usual administrative stuff. We need a volunteer to act as a scribe. Yes, we got a volunteer, thank you, Matthew. And we need more volunteers. We need somebody to monitor Jabber. Anybody has a Jabber client on his laptop? Yeah? Sure, thanks. I have to warn you, this session is being recorded. If you ask a question, please use the microphone so we can identify you afterwards. And next thing is the list of participants. I'll just
hand it out. Go.
And then we have minutes from the last meeting, that's Stripe 48. They have been circulated on the mailing lists. Are there any comments on those? If not, we'll approve them. Okay, so much for the administrative stuff. Let me quickly go to the agenda. We have two sessions. One until the coffee break at 10:30, and there we have talks from Ian Phillips, who is here, Kaveh Sanamatyan, who I haven't seen, but he said he would be here. Well, we'll see. And if not, we'll just reshuffle the order of the talks. And the usual RapidCC TTM status report. We then break for coffee. And after coffee, we have talks by Per Baratz and Jordi Domingo. We have a talk by Gianluca Iacone. And we have a talk by Jordi Baratz. And that should fill up the program to lunchtime. Is there anybody who wishes to add something to the agenda? No? Then this is the agenda, and we'll start with Ian Phillips, who will be talking about modeling end-to-end delays using Vibul. So, Ian, floor is yours. Yeah, well, you could. Let's see. There you go.
Okay, thank you for having me here this morning. I'm Ian Phillips, I'm a lecturer in computer science at Loughborough University. For those of you who don't know, Loughborough is down in the middle of the UK, so Jose and I have driven up this morning. We're a bit tired and weary from traffic jams, etc. I was a student in Manchester. I left 12 years ago, and I remember it raining a lot. And it's still raining a lot 12 years later. The work I'm going to present today is partly a history of what we've been doing at Loughborough in performance measurement of networks, and partly some specific stuff that Jose has been doing for his PhD on the mathematical modelling of network delays based on network delay measurements as measured by people like Henk. Jose's here to answer all the difficult questions about the maths, so if it gets too bad at the end, I'll let him take over. But for now, I'll talk about some of the history at Loughborough. In the UK, the academic network that links all the universities together was called Janet, and then a bit later on it became called Super Janet as it got faster. And Super Janet, when it started in 1994, was built over SMDS and ATM networks, and it was installed by BT and operated by BT for a few years. As part of BT's contract to run this network, they had to fund some university research as well, and this part of that research was stuff that I was involved with, a university research initiative called Managing Multi-Service Networks. It involved these six universities. They're all the sort of major players in the UK in networks. And the project ran for 5 years, and it employed me for 5 years, so it was a good thing in that sense. When the 5 years were up, I then got a lectureship in computer science, and I've tried to continue some aspects of the monitoring work that we did in this project. Specifically at Loughborough in this work, we built performance monitoring and measurement tools. Similar to Henk's test traffic tools, I believe, we have built an active sender to send UDP packets around BT's SMBS network, and we used GPS for synchronising, and we did all this in 1994. What we actually installed was more specific to BT's network. We had what BT had done is they decided that they needed to do some monitoring of their SMBS network. SMBS is a data service, a very well managed network, so they decided they needed to do some monitoring of that network. So they installed some test points and then use fixed latency megastreams to bring the test points all back to the same room. So although the test points were in five separate locations around the UK, Edinburgh, Manchester, Birmingham, Bristol and London, we have megastream links to bring all these back to a room in their operations centre, which is in Walsall, near Birmingham in the West Midlands. We then installed a test station, or actually a set of three test stations, at Walsall, which sent packets around this network. So we could, with clever routing, we could start here, send a packet to this router, down the megastream to London, say to Manchester, back to this router, which will also be at Walsall, and back down to here. So in one packet, we could measure the single-way delay from London to Manchester, plus the delay attributed to the megastreams. But megastream delays are constant. So any variation in that delay, and of course, its variation is the thing that we're interested in, could be attributed to the SMBS network. The Ethernet was used for nothing else except for this test traffic, so that wasn't contributing any significant variation to delay. Later on, as the project expanded, we installed equipment at Loughborough with its own megastream link, just simply to retrieve the data from the systems at Walsall. And we have what we ended up with here was a whole separate project, separately funded from the URI, simply to operate this measurement network. So BT would give us money every year. We'd have a man whose job it was to retrieve all these measurements and search out interesting things. And they carry on doing that. They've been funding that project for nearly 10 years now. And it's been useful for us to have a constant contact with BT. And we've managed to build research work on top of that operations project and got three PhD students to complete based on aspects of this system, which I'll talk about now. So when we talk about performance, we're talking about loss and delay. Some people talk about throughput as well, but throughput's a bit harder to measure with an active sender, so we'll talk about loss and delay. And you all know that you get loss and delay problems when something gets misconfigured, something fails, some application starts behaving in a way that you didn't expect it to. Or maybe you get denial of service attacks. All these sorts of things cause performance problems. And they cause performance problems on all sorts of networks, not just internet, but also SMBS-style networks, any style of network. If you get this sort of problem, then you have a performance issue. That's what I've already said about the monitoring project. One of the PhD students who looked at this work when he was an undergraduate and said, I could improve some of the ways that you display the information to the operators. So he proposed this system where you took a shape, and depending on the current state of the network, you deform this shape in some way. So for example, looking at these down the bottom here, if the standard shape, this reference shape, is as is shown on the left, then if we were to deform the stem of the E to make it smaller, then it would all shrink down. Or if we were to deform the top branch to make it larger, we get this sort of situation, and so on, and so on. And if we could attribute a particular parameter of network performance to each one of these, what we call degrees of freedom, we can then have a very simple to look at thing that says, we can look at it and say, if it's the right shape, our network's performing okay, and if it's not the right shape, then we want to worry about it in some way. And in this particular system, we ended up with a screen like this. Because we had the five test points, there are five sources across the top and five destination down the side, and there is one E for each packet size that we were sending across the network. And I think what we... On each of these... each of the branches of the E, this is the sort of 99th percentile of the delay, the 95th centile and the median, the 50th centile of delay, and the vertical bar is the most recent delay. So this is a network where everything is performing okay because nothing's changed colour, which is one of the ways we can indicate something's going wrong. But all the E's are about the same sort of shape across the network. Up here is an example of where the 95th centile and the 99th centile are quite large, but the most recent delay is still not excessively large, so we're not worrying about it too much. The next sort of graph is this one where all the things have become bigger, and because they've exceeded a threshold, we've changed the colour. So the operator can instantly, one glance at the screen, can see that some of his routes are misbehaving. And looking down the middle there, and down this side, it looks like all those routes that start at Edinburgh, all those routes that start at London, are all performing in some way that we might want to worry about it, so we can start examining things. And the purpose behind this sort of interface was not to necessarily diagnose the problem, but just help the operators to know the best place to look next, because they have a set of management tools anyway, and this was to provide added value for their management systems. A second tool we developed was to provide a similar sort of interface based on errors on the links within the SMDS network. And I don't want to go into too much detail because it's not the real purpose of this talk, but each of these blobs on the screen here represent a switch or a set of switches within BT's SMDS network, and when they begin to perform in such a way that the operator should be worried, they change colour. And also the green lines show the links between the switches, and the triangles on the green lines, which are actually animated in real life, and it's very exciting. The triangles on the green line represent the current bandwidth in use on that particular link. And again, this is, as it goes yellow, it means the network's beginning to behave badly, and these are all parameterized by sliders down the bottom here. And if it goes red, then the network's really performing badly. And again, if you can imagine a situation where only one bit has gone red, that gives one bit for the operator to begin to home in on to try and find out what's going on. And we installed this for BT, and one of their customers was particularly pleased that we had, because it enabled them to solve their problems more quickly. Another thing we do is, at the moment, manually, somebody searches through all the data and finds what we call data exceptions. This is where the network is behaving in a different way to the previous times, or a different way to the way it was expected. Hence, we use the term exceptions. A number of systems have been put in place. We still use the manual system because it's most trustworthy, but people have used rule-based systems and experimented with neural networks to search out these sorts of systems. And all of these systems are based on simple statistics such as the minimum delay, maximum delay, the difference between the maximum and the minimum, median variance, etc. Now, Loughborough aren't the only people doing active measurements across the packet network. RIPE is. And Sprint have done some passive measurements. And a lot of other people have done various measurements here. The one at the bottom, UK Light Mast project, which has actually been renamed to UK Light Masts project, is a passive measurement project which we've just started up to attempt to monitor every packet that goes past the POPs in UK Light, the new sort of research network in the UK. So that will be more interesting because it's 10 gigabit links and we're trying to monitor every packet. But where can we go next? Well, that sort of background, we have measurements, people are interested in measurements, we can do interesting things with measurements in order to improve the way the networks are operated. And that's how I was when I started, when Jose started his PhD. And our next thought was, well, so far we've taken an engineering approach. We've solved the problems from an engineering perspective, and we want to now do a proper scientific approach, having moved from an electrical engineering department to a computer science department. That made some sense. So how can we use maths to improve these delays? How can we build some sort of model of the internet so we can then test against the model to see what's going on, to see if it's different to what we expect? Is it possible maybe to predict internet performance in the same way that we can predict the weather? Because it's now such a big system, it may behave similarly to natural systems anyway. Other well-known internet researchers such as Sally Floyd in the States have said there needs to be more modelling done of the internet, and this modelling needs to be done based on real measurements but not on simulations. So we feel quite good about ourselves that we're doing that sort of thing. Right, we've done all that. So we need some metrics to define performance. And we've got delay and loss, and a lot of people, including Ripe, have sent packet probes using ping or one-way UDPs to get delay measurements across networks. Now, it's been well known that network traffic is self-similar in some way and shows some sort of long-range dependency. And a lady called Dina Pampianaki, when she was working in the States, discovered that if you put self-similar traffic through a router, it gives some sort of heavy tail distribution of delays, and this can be, she said, this can be modelled by a Weibull distribution. And she demonstrated that on a single hop scenario. So our aim is to go multiple hop and say, can we model end-to-end delays across the internet using several Weibull distributions? Do you want me to say closer or further away? Okay, I'm sorry. I can't stand still, I'm not used to it. So this is what a Weibull distribution looks like. It has two parameters, the R and S parameter. The R parameter relates to the where S is large. So where S is small, the R parameter represents the mode of the distribution. And the S parameter is related to the tail behavior. So as this blue graph shows a set of Weibull distributions with a fixed R and varying S's. So as S changes, the tail gets wider and wider. And the red graph shows fixed S's and various R's. So again, as the as R changes, the mode of the distribution moves up the side of the graph. So if we have a set of delay measurements which we think are drawn from a distribution that consists of a mixture of Weibull distributions, we want to find out something about these Weibull distributions that we believe the delays are drawn from. And I don't propose to go into all the detail of the mathematics here because it's very early in the morning. And Jose's here, and he can answer those questions at coffee time if necessary. But what we want to end up with is a mixture of M distributions, such that when we sum together, each with their own set of parameters, which we'll call theta j. So theta j represents an R and an S parameter. When we sum all those together, each of them weighted by their own alpha, we have a distribution which matches the data that we've drawn from the delay measurements. And the aim is to find the alphas and the thetas to best fit the histogram of the delay measurements. To do this, we have to do a lot of fiddly stuff with maths, which I won't go into, but we end up using an algorithm called expectation maximization, which runs through various steps, and we end up with these sorts of equations that enable us to have an array of alphas, r's and s's, which we are confident fit the drawn data in some way. Right, we've got the errors here. So to show an example of how well this algorithm matches the data, what we have in this picture here is, in the top left, some delay. So measured against time, this is one day's worth of delays. So it's midnight across to midnight, and this is a typical delay pattern that I'm sure you've been seeing for years, where it's quite quiet in the night time, then all the Europeans wake up and the network becomes more busy, and then they go home at tea time and the Americans wake up and the network remains busy. This graph on the right here is the histogram of those delays, and after you've initialized the algorithm, obviously the match to that histogram is very poor. So if you go down to one iteration, we're trying to match 5 Weibull distributions to this data. After one iteration, we end up with this. The red line here represents the attempted match against the histogram. And over in this graph here, we have the blue line is the same as the red line in the top right, and the dotted lines represent the 5 Weibull distributions multiplied by their alphas. So if the alphas are small, the distributions are small. And then we have a QQ plot representing the closeness of the fit. After 2 iterations, it gets closer. After 3, it gets closer still. After 4, it carries on getting closer, and so on and so on. After 10, 15, and 50, and 100. And by the time we've done 100 iterations, we've got a very close match, with the only slightly far away matches at the tail end. We tend to ignore the extreme tail, although we may ignore the very extreme tail. It's the bit just in from the extreme tail that is actually the interesting bit in a delay measurement, because that's the time in which the network is probably behaving in a way that you need to be interested in it. The first set of data we had was the first week of measurements. Henk sent us some ripe data, which was the first week of measurements in 2002. And Jose ran this against each day on each route that he'd got there. Now, using this error formula, we get a result that says, of all those days and routes, we could get 85% of the experiments to match within 5% error, which felt good. Here's an example of another graph. This has a serious step change, probably due to some routing change, which has improved the network performance. Hence, the histogram has a double peak on it. But however, the algorithm can still match that quite closely. You can see that the 5 histograms here have given a very close match to the histogram. Sorry, the 5 Weibulls here have given a very close match to the histogram. And our hope is that we can do mathematics on the 5 Weibulls, which are easier to do than on a huge number of delay measurements. Now, so far, it's been, let's take our delay measurements and apply a mathematical technique to it, but you can quite rightly ask me, what's the point in doing all of this? And that's really where our work's going next. The thing we're interested in so far is, how do these parameters evolve over time? And one way we can look at this is to say, here's another day's worth of measurements. Again, here you can see the nighttime-daytime difference is more noticeable. If we match, we've matched that 2 Weibulls against that distribution, and then on an hour-by-hour basis, or half-hour-by-half-hour basis, we've matched those 2 Weibulls to just half an hour of the day and ended up with new values for alpha. So keeping RNS fixed, we see how the alphas are used throughout the day. And the result we get here is shown in the bottom graphs, where the alphas start off at about half each. So the 2 distributions are both contributing about half to the real data. Then throughout the day, one distribution's alpha goes down, so its contribution to the real data is disappearing, and the other one goes up. And this, again, may be useful information that we could use to track network performance over time, but that's still ongoing work. So what have we decided? What have we discovered? Well, we've discovered that we can match a combination of or a mixture of Weibull distributions to end-to-end delay histograms, and obviously the Weibull parameters impact the appearance of those distributions. An expectation is a suitable algorithm for finding this mixture of distributions. There are probably applications in all of these fields, but I don't know what those applications are yet. We're still at the beginning of the work, and it's all going on. The next part of the work is that we have now the whole of 2003's measurements from Henk, and we're going to sort of set our system to process those against some libels and see if anything interesting happens. And there were some interesting times in 2003 when there were particular denial of service attacks and particular where the network began to behave in an unexpected way. So we can see whether we can notice anything special about that with our libel matching. At this point, I have to thank the other people that have been involved with this work. So if you've heard of any of these, you can express my thanks to them. David Parrish in Electrical Engineering, Omar Bashir and Mark Sanford in the same place. Jose's PhD is funded by Computer Science at Loughborough. And we thank Henk again for his 75 gigabytes of transfers he gave us earlier on this year. And now, I will take any questions.
Questions?
Not yet, but that's the sort of thing that we're going to try and do next. So far, all we've established is that you've got this mix of distributions. Now, the next thing we want to do is establish what it means. Jose's done other work on trying to find the optimal number of distributions, because you could arbitrarily say it's 5, or is it 1 per switch, or 1 per router, or anything, or 1 per busy router. The work has gone on from this into trying to determine the optimal number of distributions, and the work will then go on from that and say, well, what the hell does it all mean anyway? It's what we're trying to do next.
Because if you come from point of view interpretation, maybe using, because the way the distribution problems that you have a lot of parameters.
Yeah.
Sometimes it might be better to have distribution that have less parameters, and that will have such a good fitting that will have a much more simple interpretation.
Well, the viable distribution only has 2 parameters. So we've got 2 parameters and an alpha for each.
Good thing about the viable distribution is that the parameters are performance related. So, for example, the AR parameter is related to the mode or the distribution, that means the maximum or maximum peak. Whereas this parameter is related to the tail behavior, so this is related to performance somehow. For example, if you've got a link where that exhibits a large R, it's as low as, this means that the delays are very highly variable. So this is somehow performance related. So you can actually indicate how the link is performing by just looking at these parameters.
Thanks for the question. Okay. Anybody else?
Any other questions? No? Then let's go to the speaker.
Oh my God. So the next up is Javi Saint-Martin from DeepSix in Paris. That's small detail. I think we have it. Did you send it to us?
Yes, I sent it. But I was in Korea when I sent it.
Okay. No, you have it on your laptop?
Yes, I have it.
Just plug it in.
Yes.
Work.
Thank you, Henk. Then, what I will present you today is a kind of a global overview of one research project that we have in France that is called the Metropolis Project. Inside this overview, I will also present some of the work that we have done in collaboration with right people, and some of the enhancement that we have do, and some kind of question that we ask, research question that we are asking from ourselves in the Metropolis project, and some beginning of answer. The Metropolis project is a project that has been launched 3 years before in France, and it contains almost all the academic component of the French research community, and also France Telecom, which is the main French operator. And this is a project that was funded by the French government through the RMRT, which is the funding agency for communication project. It was a 2 million euro project that was in fact occupied somewhat 400 man months over 36 months. The project will end in late 2004, maybe we'll have an extension up to the first quarter of 2005, but it was a kind of very big project. The project was led by Leipzig's Paris 6 University, and I was the coordinator and the technical leader of the project. The objective of the project was to develop a common framework for metrology. Metrology meaning the science of measurement of IP network. And at the beginning we had a lot of ambitious objective. The project come out from the constatation, from the observation, that there was a lot of measurement going around in the community, but transforming this observation to a science was still challenging. And we had a lot of work to do about defining methodology for QoS measurement and methodology for SLA that will not be dependent on the way that you are measuring. Because actually there is not a clear and defined methodology for example, comparing two operators. We wanted to develop realistic models, because without realistic model it was almost impossible to do anything about the network and to have the necessary a priori for interpreting the results. We wanted to analyze in vivo the network behavior up to the measurement study that have been done during the past 5 years. There was not too much empirical analysis of what's really happened inside the network and what's the kind of behavior that protocol have. And the last objective was to use this measurement for doing something, because measurement per se is interesting, but the most important thing is to use the measurement for doing something else, and we had in mind of working in network dimension. Let me give you a kind of broad view of the measurement platform that we have deployed in this project. Actually, we have deployed three kind of platform. The first kind of platform is the passive measurement. That was the microscopic passive measurement that is based on that card. Actually, we are measuring 3 giga Ethernet measurement points, and the 3 are academic, and it generates something around 80 gigabytes of data per day per measurement point, which raised the challenge of stocking this data and using it and compressing all of this data. This information are used, in fact, as some kind of, you know, base for doing everything else at the active measurement and also at the macroscopic passive measurement. The macroscopic passive measurement have this difference with the microscopic, that it do measurement at flow level. And we are measuring, we are gathering some flow level information. Actually what we have, which is very interesting, is a probe, a measurement tool that is called COSMOS, that is that give very precise flow classification and application analysis. As a matter of example, I'm able to know by observing my traffic through COSMOS to know how many times a movie was downloaded over a different peer-to-peer network, even if it has been downloaded by different user over different sessions and so on. Kind of aggregation that we are able of doing by doing very precise applicative classification is very interesting. The second platform that is more related to RIPE and the subject of this session is active measurement. Actually, we are using some five MIMI probe, and we, one of our partners, UNST Bretagne, have also developed some kind of probes that are somewhat similar to the RIPE, which are called Saturn. And this network is actually deployed. We have 8 measurement points in France, and we are going to 15 during the year. The point that we had was that we wanted somewhat to construct our proper measurement architecture, meaning that we wanted to use the RIPE and the Saturn probes into kind of another type of architecture that I will describe in the coming slide. And what we do was that we embedded our RIPE probe into the NIMI architecture as a first attempt. And after that, we developed completely a complete architecture for measurement that I will describe in the coming slide. Then what we do was that we try to extend the RIPE architecture by answering to the need for a measurement architecture that can be controlled from any site and that enable us to deploy new metrics and new experiments very easily. Actually, the RIPE architecture is very fine with the different type of measurement that exist on this, but let's suppose that somebody wants to do a multicast measurement. It's can be somewhat tricky to use the actual architecture for doing this. And we try to see how we can do. The first try was to combine RIPE with NIMI architecture. NIMI architecture has been developed some around 5 to 6 years before in US by Vern Paxson and some other people. The NIMI architecture is an architecture for doing measurements. It doesn't propose any measurement metric, but what it do, it's an architecture for deploying a measurement and executing some other prob or some other metric measurement program. The problem of NIMI is that it has been written somewhat as a research project, and so it's a very ad hoc architecture that works fine but is not really what we need in a real dynamic environment. Let's suppose, for example, in NIMI, if one of the nodes gets stuck, blocked or have a problem, we will not have any feedback getting back that we have a problem at this site. Meaning that we worked in a new architecture, and what we tried to do was that we worked really with people at in the system research community, and we developed completely from scratch a new microkernel specific for measurement. The microkernel that we developed had some kind of properties that are suitable for measurement architecture. For example, we needed to have a complete full serialization inside the microkernel, meaning to be able, for example, to control all the microkernels through only one console, only one scheme console, meaning that if you type a command on one console, all the receiver will get the same command and will not execute it in the same time because of the delay, but will at least receive the same command. We wanted to have a kind of very flexible architecture, meaning that we use a component-based architecture. The measurement tools is defined as component, and the different component are related to a graph that is defined, that can be changed online, that can be changed on the fly, and the, each component generate, do some process, and give the result of this process as an event or as a result to other companies. This architecture has been implemented. You can download it on Savannah SourceForge, and you can use it, and it works very well. It can actually, we have a FreeBSD version, a Windows version, a Linux version, and a Mac OS version that is existing, and all of this interact. And what we do was that we embedded completely the RIPE architecture inside the Pandora architecture as an example of possible architecture. And what we try to do actually is we are experimenting some kind of interaction between a pure mini prop and a Pandora prop that will emulate, in fact, the NIMI behavior and the RIPE behavior. The approach that we have followed globally in the project was the following. We had deployed some measurement platform, active or passive, and this measurement platform generates a lot of measure. The question that is central in our project was the question of interpretation. By interpretation, we mean how to relate effects that we are observing to causes that have generated this effect. And for relating effect to causes, we need to have models, because models give you the a priori for saying that if something that you are seeing is in accordance with the model or not. And meaning that in the project, we developed, based on the observation, some realistic model that were used as for interpretation. And the most important point is that interpretation, in fact, say you how to do measurement. In fact, the question that we should ask is, how can I do a measurement that can be interpreted? Meaning that interpretation give you the methodology for doing the measurement. And this loop was the loop that we try to implement. As a side result of the project, we had I did some application that was developed under the project with this architecture. We work a lot on classification of goals. Elephants and mice is the simplest one, but applicative classification, fast applicative classification. There was some paper that was done around this. The other point that we worked a lot on was on monitoring. How can I be able to monitor a network? And in fact, define architecture for monitoring. The architecture that was developed inside the project was to say that the monitoring tools is a tools that need to be able to separate what is predictable from what is not predictable. What is predictable by a model from what is not predictable by a model. If something is predictable by a model, means that it's somewhat under control, because the model that you are using is have been able to predict it, and you would be able to do the necessary action if your system was well designed. But if something happens that is not predictable, that is not predictable by a model, it is something abnormal. And we develop a complete monitoring architecture based on Kalman feature on this. We work on SLA characterization and SLA validation. And we have some work also on dimensioning, traffic matrix estimation, and about characterization of traffic. As a side effect of the modeling also, we develop some scenario for simulation and emulation that are very useful when you want to do simulation. Now, let's go more precisely into active measurement. The challenge in active measurement are, as we are seeing, are these two main challenges. The first challenge is measurement methodology and interpretation. How can we interpret active measurement? And how can we construct active measurement that will be generalizable and that can be interpreted? The second challenge that we have is going to scale. Actually, if you see, RIPE is a 100 by 100 mesh around. Planet Lab is 200 sites. Kaida is 24 monitor and 1 mega target. If you want to scale to a kind of larger architecture, what have we to do? And If we imagine that we are constructing a kind of distributed measurement architecture, how can we scale up for this kind of architecture? For example, one project that we are actually working on is what we call Traceroute at Home. The idea is very similar to SETI at Home. The idea is to say that somebody download a simple screensaver that will do some offline measurement when he's not here. And the offline measurement is not about his traffic. The offline measurement is about the delay that he's observing to some different point and about the trace route that he's observing on different point. Actually, the idea comes from, there is a very well-known site in France called grenouille.com, frog.com, that have 18,000 users that have downloaded a very simple agent that enable the people in this website to compare the different ISPs in France. The idea come here. Then the advantage of this approach was to capture the network edge and to give, in fact, the power to users and for comparing and monitoring their network. But the problem that we have in this kind of very large-scale architecture, or how to consolidate in a central point large-scale measurement, how to deal with missing data, how to deal with spatial correlation, and actually we are working on some kind of coding-based approach for dealing with this kind of thing. The other problem is the malicious user. Let's suppose that this is something that has happened in grenouille.com. For example, one ISP wanted to be more, to be better than other ISPs in one city of the country. What he do was that he go and bought some boxes of his competitor and implement the measurement software and give fake answer, meaning that after some days, the quality of the other competitor was very low and the quality of itself network was very good. And how to deal with this kind of fake measurement is something that can be interesting in a large-scale measurement architecture. How many time I have, Hank?
From
10-12 minutes. Because I can deal with two problems, actually. I can deal with active measurement interpretation or about generalization. Let's begin with the interpretation. Maybe it's more easy. It has less formula. Active measurement framework is the following. We are sending some probes that will cross the network. And the measurement, the agent, measure agent inject at time ti some packets. And each packet is a probe that will provide information about the cross path. Actually, there are two main class of metrics that have been defined by IPPM group. The first one is the loss process. The second one is the one-way delay. The underlying model that we have in this active measurement is that the network is somewhat modeled by two elements. One element is a random delay, which is the delay that will be seen by the packet. And the second element is a kind of gauge that can be open or closed, a kind of on-off process. This delay process and this on-off process are continuous in time. Each packet will see its proper value. But what we are doing in active measurement is that we send some packets at different time and we sample the state of this random delay and this on-off process. And the objective is, based on this sample, what can I say about the underlying process that exists? If we want to think about interpretation, nowadays we are able to do measurement. We have a lot of sources of measurement. And the question is, what do this measurement mean? What do this active measurement means? And the main question relates to interpreting this measurement. And interpretation means relating effect to causes. How can I relate what I'm seeing to what to the causes that have led to this? And we wanted also, we have to be able to predict the behavior of the system. Interpretation means being able to define some rules that will that can be applied in the future at different time scale. And being able to react also is somewhat related to interpretation. And the big problem is that interpretation need an a priori, need to have an idea about what is normal and what is not normal, what is outlier and what is not outlier. If I say you that in the month of October in the south of France, in the month of September in the south of France, there is snowy, or in Spain, snowy, everybody will say this is a scoop, because we have the a priori that in month of September, based on 100 years of observation, there is no snow in the south of Europe. But if I don't have this a priori, I'm not able to say if this is normal or not. In network, a lot of cases we don't have any a priori. If somebody comes and says you that, oh, in my network I have 5% of packet loss, is it a good news or a bad news? It will depend really on the situation of the network, and you need to have this a priori for doing interpretation. Up to now, there have been two main class of approach that were applied in modeling in network. The first approach is the descriptive approach, which is much more used in measurement paper. In this approach, network is supposed to being as a black box with unknown structure, and you try to, by doing a top-down approach, to describe the observation using some descriptive parameter. For example, distribution, mean, variance, and so. But the drawback of this descriptive approach is that it doesn't explain you why. It doesn't answer what if, what will happen if something changes. And it is difficult to interpret, and we are not using all the available information that we have. Because in a lot of cases, we are not only observing the network, we are also network specialists. And we have some idea about the process that happened in the network. The second approach is the constructive approach, which is the more classical approach. In this case, you suppose that the network is constituted of router, queues, links, and you try to simulate or do analytic analysis of this network and give some performance validation. This approach is down top, meaning that you begin with scenario and you reach to what you have to observe. The big problem is that the generalization in this case is difficult. In a lot of cases, the simulation that we are doing comes down to be something that is only valid for the scenario of the simulation and cannot be generalized to a situation which is somewhat different from the simulation. And simulation, because of this, do not describe real measurement, and the approach is somewhat open loop. And what we have to do is to try to mix up these two approaches and to define a methodology for interpreting measurement, for developing realistic model, and for building scenario for realistic evaluation. The situation that we have is very similar to the plateau cavern allegory. The plateau in the Republic described the situation of people that are seeing on some wall some shadow and ask from themselves, what is this shadow related to? And in a lot of cases in network, we observe some measurement that are some shadow or some existing some unobserved process or some unobserved event happening in the network. And now we have to find out what was the thing that generate the shadow. Then the interpretation framework is as follows. You have an observation and you are asking from yourself what's the causes, but you have an a priori idea of what's happening in the network. You have an a priori model of what is happening in the network, of the process happening in the network. But what you have is that you have the observation, but you have not the input of this model and you have not the context. And the interpretation means to solve this inverse problem. What are the input and the context inside my a priori model that will give me the more faithful observation at the output? This interpretation problem can be divided in two main inverse problems. The first problem is the modeling problem. What's the best context that will describe what I am observing? And the interpretation problem, knowing the context, what is the input hidden, the hidden input that will best describe my observation? A lot of measurement problem might be expressed in this framework. For example, tomography is one. Active measurement also is one. I will try to describe the active measurement situation in the coming slide. The steps in measurement interpretation are as follows. The first step is choose of an a priori model that is an input-output structure that will say you what's happening inside your network, up to your knowledge. You have to do some statistical hypothesis on the context and on the input, and you have to solve the two inverse problems that I described, the modeling problem and the inference problem. And what is more important, and is a lot of cases forget in our domain, is how to evaluate a model. Now, actually, you cannot construct a model or an interpretation that will be good for everything. You have to very clearly describe and define what is the purpose of your modeling or your analysis. And this can be done by a kind of quality function. Let me give you an application of this for interpretation of active measurement. We assume, let's suppose that we said that inside the network we have a single bottleneck. But the single bottleneck parameters are unknown. The context is the internet traffic that is competing with my measurement traffic. And what I'm observing at the end is the losses that come out of this. Then, we have two problems. The first problem, which is what I said, which is what I call the modeling problem, is how to find the parameter of the internet traffic. Let's suppose that the internet traffic is modeled by an MMPP. The parameter of this MMPP would be the rate in each state and the transition matrix. Now, the second problem is the interpretation problem. The interpretation problem consists of telling at each point of time what is the exact rate that have been existing over the network at that time. Let me give you an example of the application of the framework. This is a trace that have been gathered between France and US, an active measurement trace. We suppose as a quality function the mean square error between observed error rate and simulated or predicted error rate. And we solve these two problems. The modeling problem will tell you that this loss rate can be explained by using a three-state competing traffic with a load factor of 1.25 and 1.07 for each state. This is the transition matrix of the MMPP background traffic. And this is the probability of being in each one of these states. The interpretation problem will say you know at each moment of time in which state we were. For example, at this time we were in state 2, that is in fact this state. And at this time we go to state, we were in state 2, that is this state. At this point of time we go to this state. And at some point of time we go to this state. Which is the first one. In fact, what I'm doing here is that I'm interpreting my packet losses by some traffic inside the network. This problem can be solved. In fact, there are the two problems that I describe are statistical inference problem. There's two main class of resolution, the maximum likelihood and the Bayesian. I don't want to go into detail about this. I think that I've finished my time, or I have 2 or 3 minutes. Let me explain you another problem that we have worked on, which is the generalization problem. The main question of generalization problem is the following. How to relate inference made on the probing flow to other flow? Let's suppose that I'm the right context. I am observing that the delay, the mean delay observed on the right flow is a value. What can I say about the mean delay observed by a TCP flow competing with the right flow? What can I say about another UDP flow competing with the right flow? We try to deal with this problem from the theoretical point of view. And we reach to the following. Let me give you some preliminary. Let's suppose that there are K flows that are sharing a path. And let's suppose that X sub K is a metric of interest, for example, delay or loss rate. Let's suppose it's delay for simplification. That can be every parameter. Now, what I want to know is, I want to have the distribution of this metric. For example, the delay of a TCP flow. Of course, this distribution is unknown. I'm not able to observe it. But this distribution, in fact, will be some kind of probability of the value of the delay being inside one interval. This value can be inferred if I was able to observe the TCP packet themselves. I would have been able to infer this by using the simple estimator. I was seeing how many times in my observation this flow, the delay have been between this value and this value, and generate me an empirical distribution, saying me that, for example, over 100 crop, 10 were between 1 millisecond and 5 milliseconds, 12 between 5 milliseconds and 10 milliseconds, and so on. The problem is that I'm not able to observe the metric over the TCP flow, for example. But I am able to observe the metric over another flow, which is my measurement flow. Let's call the metric over another flow as y of n. And the good news is that I'm able to construct the distribution of the observed flow. But how can I relate the distribution of the observed flow to the distribution of the unobserved flow? And what we do is a kind of very simple trick. The probability of the unobserved flow is simply related to the probability of the observed flow through this relationship. And this is what I observed. It's easy to get this, to know how many times I have observed the measurement flow in this value. This also is known. This is the empirical distribution of the measurement flow. The only thing that I need is the likelihood ratio, this part. And we can show, theoretically speaking, that this likelihood is simply equal to the rate of the flow that we are not observing to the overall rate in the network. Meaning that if I want to extend what I'm observing on a measurement flow to an unobserved measurement flow, I need only to weight the observation by the ratio of the rate of the measurement flow or of the unobserved flow toward the overall rate of the network. For example, if the rate of an application is very large, the importance at one point of time is very important. The importance of one sample is very high for this flow and is very low for other flows. Meaning that by integrating into the analysis the rate, I am able to infer, to generalize what I'm observing to other flows. But the problem here is that for calculating the rate of all flow, I need passive measurement. Meaning that I need a hybrid passive and active measurement platform. The passive part for measuring only the rate of all flows, and the active flow for measuring the delay or something like this. Meaning that actually we are going toward this kind of architecture. As in the Metropolis project, we have passive and active platform, we are able to validate this model, and this is something that we are doing just actually. Let me finish. I have what I can say to people is that I'm giving some outcome of the project, but you can see it on the slides. What I can say to people is that the project, the Metropolis project, will be happy to share his result with other partners. Actually, Metropolis project is very active at the European level. We are some partner of the project are with the INEX Network of Excellence. I'm actually leading myself the task force on measurement inside INEX. And some of the other members of the project, especially Daniel Kaufman, is with ORNGI project, meaning that the Metropolis project have some good close relationship with the two main network of excellence inside the European Union, actually. And we are going to scale up our research at the European level with some of the partners in INEX and ORNGI to be able, in fact, to construct a kind of European level measurement project with trace exchange, information expertise exchange, and so on. And we are open to this collaboration with other people, because we believe, and it's clear, that measurement cannot be done by only one person or one group of persons. It needs to be done in collaboration. And inside the network of excellence, there are some structure for doing it, but it doesn't mean that it's only for the people inside, and we are able to open some part of the sharing to other partners. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? So I have one question. Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned that you have been working with the practice CC test boxes, it mm-hmm. would be interesting to hear from you what features you were missing on these things, mm-hmm. and things you added that we should transform back into the main development.
Actually, we had some interaction with people at RIE. Not we have not a problem with the RIE boxes. Now, RIE boxes are very good measurement boxes. The main problem is that RIE boxes have not been designed for going into the scale of a large network, which is, if I understand, also some kind of the problem that RIPE also is observing, because when you have 100 users, you can have a small set of engineers managing it. If you go to 200, it's not anymore possible. And the management of this is not so difficult. It's not so easy. Meaning that what we do was that, and the objective that we had was completely different, because RIPE is a kind of operational monitoring idea. In our case, we wanted to have research monitoring testbed, meaning that the amount of flexibility needed for a research monitoring testbed is somewhat different from the amount of flexibility needed for an operational monitoring system. Meaning that we are, of course, open for sharing our results. We are very happy with the RIPE boxes, but in fact we are embedding it into our proper research architecture. In fact, the good point of RIPE, I think, is the ability that it had to be enough flexible to be embedded inside another purpose and another architecture, which is, I think, the most powerful point.
Okay. Another question? No?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And then the last speaker of this session, and I'll
Now, what's happening here?
Okay, so last talk of this session is from the RIPE-NCC. This is the usual status report from the group running the test traffic measurement service, basically reporting on what we've been doing since the last meeting. Before I start with that, I'll have one. I have one slide, since we noticed that about one out of four people at this meeting has never been to a RAP meeting before. So we have one introductionary slide, and then we go on with a number of ongoing topics: our internal reorganization, people working on the project, deployment statistics, a whole bunch of small changes that we made over the couple of months, and what we plan to do sort of for the rest of this year and well into 2005. So this is the introductionary slides for those of you who have never heard of TTM before. It's a service to measure performance related parameters on the internet. We measure one way, we measure things like delay, loss, routing, jitter, DNS response times, bandwidth, things like that. You can use it for understanding your network, troubleshooting, verify SLAs, or anything else where you want to know want to get some numbers about your network. It's an additional service under IPNCC. Basically, anybody interested can get it. You don't have to be a local IR. You buy the measurement box from us. You install it, and after that, all you have to do is look at the results. This is the URL. Outside, you find glossies and information sheets on the registration desk. Myself, Rene Wilhelm, and Matthew Williams, sitting in the front here in the blue shirts, are available to answer any questions. And we also have a couple of terminals outside here. And if you want to see things demonstrated, we'll be happy to give you a demo. So that's what TTM is. So now go back to the ongoing work. As you heard in the main meeting, the NCC is doing some internal reorganization. In the old situation, the new projects group became involved in running data collection, infrastructure, and software maintenance. That's basically operations. That's not what the group was supposed to be doing. But, of course, these things take time and resources from the work we were supposed to be doing, namely look at data, come up with new products and services for the RAP membership. So we decided to restructure that, move out the operational parts to the operational and software development groups, and focus on the work we're doing. And this is not only applicable to TTM, it's also applicable to the RISC projects discussed in the routing working group. When we started this whole exercise, we put in one major requirement, and that was that outside users should only see improvement in service levels. So we did a questionnaire amongst the TTM and RISC users late 2002. Discovered that people were very happy with the service. We didn't want that to drop. Also, given the size of this project, we decided to do it in two steps. First do the RIS, then do TTM. RIS has been done April, May to August. It's basically completed on time, and we're in the middle of transferring TTM. So, where are we? Well, this is roughly the schedule. This is an operation that needs planning. We've done that. It then involves getting a lot of new people into the working on TTM, and that means internal training, so people have been trained. We're now, as we speak, moving the help desk, so if you contact the TT operators at the RIPNCC, you'll have noticed that somebody will answer your ticket within a day, the ticket has a number, we'll follow up on it, etc. The operators also have a ticketing system. We're moving this help desk function to a central place where all these questions are answered. That involves setting up a new ticketing system that's being done at the moment. Involves getting operators up to speed. That's also in progress. And hopefully we have all this done by October 4th. then in October, November, we'll look at maintenance of the software. We'll hand over some of the software we've developed over the years to engineers who are more specialized in maintaining it over long term rather than developing. The whole monitoring, control, and central processing things will move to the operations department and a few other bits and pieces. So we've done the first two steps, and we should have done everything by late November. This has some staff consequences. Since we were operating the service, some of the operators were actually sitting in the new project group, so now moving elsewhere in the department. James Aldrich and Ruben Mustafa. James has moved to the ops department. Ruben will move soon. And Ruben will also take the role of TTM service coordinator in the operations group, which is essentially the person who makes sure that all tickets are processed, actions are taken, and he will make sure that if you order a new box from us, you'll actually get it. You also see a few new names on under the trouble tickets. Two that will sort of start signing messages immediately are Emil Horta and Miriam Schoen, both from Drive NCC. A few more names will appear in due course. Okay. A few more words about people. As you probably know, we also always have interns at the Drive NCC. One of them finished, Michael Svoboda. He wrote a master thesis, the URL is on the screen, on IP tunnel detection for V6. He compared performance of IPv4 and IPv6 networks, and he looked at Percacci numbers or a method to quantify quantify delays and related to physical network distances. So this has been described in the main meeting, or you can just download this thesis. Another student started, Thomas Wanna. He is interested in timekeeping. Well, his picture is on the screen, and hopefully you'll see him at the main meeting, which means that he has done a great project. If not, he has a problem since his thesis won't be finished. Okay, that's about people. Deployment statistics. So this is the usual graph with test boxes installed and sold over time. See it, so that's it starts back there, quarter one 2001, goes up to quarter three 2004. Dropped a little bit over the summer, but still we installed about 12 new boxes so far this year. And for those of you who want to know where they are, here's a nice graph. So Sweden, Ireland, couple in Holland, Germany, Luxembourg, Austria, Hungary, and there are two boxes which are still on the shelf at various places, so I cannot draw a dot on the map yet since I don't know the exact locations yet. Okay. Then a couple of new features if you're looking at the data. First of all, this is the standard graph format has a bit changed. You have the test box, I'm sure you have seen these pictures. This is sort of the overview of an overview plot showing the data between two boxes on a particular day. On this one you have packet delay and hop counts. Here you have the histogram. Here you have essentially the fraction of packets arrived and lost, so the packet losses. And this is a control plot, which is not that interesting. We had some complaints about this plot. It used to plot delays in black and the hop count in red, and we basically had said one hop is 10 milliseconds. Now, at a previous software upgrade, we made the y-axis variable, and then this 1/2 is 10 milliseconds didn't really work anymore. And we tried to fix that, and we had some limits in the analysis package, and we didn't really know how to solve it, so we just waited. And the problem solved itself. Since the latest release of the software allows you to make a graph with two different y-axes, so one in black here and one in red there, and we used the y, the black axis, to make to plot the delays in milliseconds, and the red axis to plot the number of hops. And now, regardless of the y-axis you pick for delays, you can always pick a suitable y-axis for the number of hops. Okay, so there it is. Then we had this plot shown to us at the previous RIPE meeting by talk by Antoine Delvaux. And so what's shown here is the maximum delay, the 97.5% over time, and this is a 4-month period from January 1st to May 1st. And Antoine looked at the pattern and saw something like this, and he was completely puzzled what was causing this effect, since he looked at his network, was sure he didn't change anything. And during the meeting, Renee and I looked at some more plots, and we saw the pattern, but we didn't quite understand it either. So we took that back with us, and we looked at all kinds of things. And we found out that this was actually correlated to Mark doing the DNSMon software development. It's actually quite funny. There was a small resource leak in the software. Well, and the line happened to be flat. Here he was doing development, so he restarted the program quite often, and he didn't see anything. Here he kept it running for a while. Resource leak started to build up. Other measurement processes started to be swapped out. Here he fixed the bug, so he restarted everything, left it running for a while. And basically this is when we discovered it and we fixed it. So this is the 4 months after that. You see it's completely flat again. Solved the problem. Fortunately it only affected a few small number of measurements over a limited period, so we're lucky in this respect. And of course the lesson we learned is that, yeah, even if two things appear to be uncorrelated, maybe they are. Okay, brings us to DNSMon, monitoring of TLD and root servers. Except for fixing the bug on the previous slides, there are no other problems. We're running it as a beta version, but it's been quite stable. One or two feature requests were implemented. We hope to have finished somewhere in November. And we're turning this into a production service. That means that you have to have some formal documents in place. Those documents exist. They have been discussed with TLDs and root server operators. If you want a copy, you ask me, but it's the usual boring legal blah blah.
What form was discussed with TLDs?
Let's see. We went DNS meeting, and we went to the center meeting. Next thing, delay alarms. As you know, boxes can warn you when delays go out of the expected range. It uses an algorithm called the long-term average, short-term average, and basically that works as shown here. This is delay. This is time. Here your measurements over a long period, say 30 days, and you calculate percentiles for those delays, median delay, best case, worst case. In the short term, now something changes, and short term measurements end up here. Then you can calculate percentiles, and if there's a statistical difference, you raise the alarm. And of course this can go back and you clear the alarm again. Now, there are all kinds of parameters in this algorithm. We guess them in 1999, and we fix them at compile time. People were not really happy with that. We ran the program about once every 15 minutes, which means that it can take up to 15 minutes before you're warned about an unusual condition. And as with every choice, some people think 15 minutes is too long, others think it's too short. We only notified people by email. People wanted syslog. Another problem people repeatedly pointed out to us that all pairs of boxes can generate alarms, and this is not that useful. For example, if I'm in Manchester and I have a direct line to a site in London, yeah, if something happens there, I want to generate an alarm. But there is also a box in New Zealand. Now, if there's something wrong between here and New Zealand, there are 100 providers that can cause the problem, and you don't want an alarm. And, of course, back in 1999, IPv6 existed, but it wasn't run on the test boxes. So we took all those things and we rewrote the program. You can now run the program as often as you like, limit the pairs, get alarms for both IPv4 or IPv6. You can also change what triggers the alarm, so the medians, as I showed on the previous slides. You can also trigger on absolute level, so set the alarm if the delay is more than 100 milliseconds or whatever you want. Percentage change, raise the alarm if it differs by more than 50%, or absolute change, raise if it's more than 10 milliseconds more or whatever. You can write the output to syslog. The only thing is that we haven't done yet is some tool to automatically configure it. We can set this up for you. Just contact us, and we'll do it. Thing that's in progress is the CVS server. People repeatedly ask us for codes. What we've done so far is put a tarball from our internal CVS repository and email it. That's a bit clumsy. You never know who has what. So the RepNCC is about to set up a public CVS server for all the software we want to give away as is, and you can just get it from there. The thing exists, it's almost ready for the public, so if you're on the mailing list, you automatically get the details. Other ongoing things, the OAMP efforts, the one-way active measurement protocol, which will allow TTM to work with similar boxes from other vendors, and thus give you a huge increase in the potential measurements that you can do. This is an IETF effort. There's a document describing it. We reviewed it sort of in light of implementing it. It means work, but we don't see any problems implementing it, so we made some suggestions to make our life easier. Those are now in the documents. The document is going the IETF security review at the moment. We expect the last call in October, and after that we'll look at it. So that brings me to what we're going to do in the next time. First of all, finish our internal reorganization. Still means lots of work, still causing me sleepless nights, although it looks pretty boring from the outside. October-November timescale, we hope to pick up OAMP. Around the last meeting, people asked us if we could use the TTM boxes for voice over IP measurements. You can do that. It only needs a new packet send distribution, which can be characterized as short bursts with known gaps. So you send out a burst of packets with gaps according to some distribution, and then you do nothing and send another burst. That's a feature we'll add. And of course, having learned our lesson on the previous slides, yes, we'll study whatever if it interferes with other measurements. More long term is have a critical look at time stamping. The time stamping we do in the boxes is based on NTP. It's a couple of years old. Things have moved since then. There are now things that can be moved inside the operating system kernel, improving accuracy and reducing the effect of interrupts and other interferences of the box. But also alternative to the clock drivers, which may make things more accurate. And we're looking at that. That's the work done by Thomas Vana, the student I showed earlier. Other things that's still ongoing is the bandwidth. That's still in the research stage. And the other thing we want to look at is comparing V6 and V4 performance and Procacci numbers as a follow-up to Michael's thesis, and I described that in more detail in the main meeting. So this is more like a keep alive from details, go back to the previous meeting. And that's about all I wanted to say. Any questions? No? Yeah.
You presented the work that you are doing about malarms, and so the thing that we have developed inside the defense project, a framework for monitoring. And I think that we can share with you some of the approach which we can get kind of more precise alarm monitoring system.
That would be great. You can send me a pointer or something, then anything else? No? Then I propose we break for coffee and we'll restart at 11 o'clock sharp. Again, if you want to see a TTM demo, ask Matthew or Renee, and we have a terminal outside. Thank you.